Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
This week, Health Minister Andrew Little spoke with Justin, and Justin asked him about whether Parliament should be sitting under levels 3 and 4. They also talk about elective surgery backlogs under lockdown and vaccinations for healthcare workers and the Māori and Pacifica community. But first, Justin asked how it was working for Andrew Little under level 4.
Oh, obviously, the daily rhythms change. It's pretty much back-to-back Zoom meetings. The nights and mornings are spent doing the readings for the meetings. But, so the patterns change. The volume of work doesn't change. In fact, it grows because you've got to do the regular stuff as well as the additional COVID stuff. So I'm on all of the committees that are providing the oversight and the briefings on COVID. And then just keeping abreast of the pressure that's on the hospitals and making sure that the ministry and the DHBs are supported to make the various decisions they do to keep patients and staff safe. And then there's the ongoing stuff, health reforms, Treaty Waitangi negotiations, and a variety of other things as well.
Last time, while we were at lockdown, you are handling the justice portfolio, but now you are the health minister. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of workload make a difference?
There's a lot going on in health anyway, and even without COVID, or even when we don't have an outbreak. There's an enormous amount going on in health anyway. It is a large, it's a large large ministry. It's a huge area because you've got the 20 DHBs and a lot of issues going on, issues with PharmAc, issues with the Cancer Control Agency, all the things that make up our health system. And even with my associates, Dr. Verrill or Peter Williams-Seal and Penny Henare. Now, we all have our hands full doing our bits of the system. And my job as the overall health minister is to make sure that everything that needs to be there is there. And of course, and supporting the COVID-19 response minister, Chris Hipkins. So there was a lot going on. And I'd say, probably a lot more than when I was justice minister.
So now, National, moving to some stuff that you were talking about earlier this week. Now, you were at the House on Tuesday, after National and ACT rejected proposals from the Speaker for a Parliament held under virtual settings. Mm. What do you think of that? Do you prefer having a virtual Parliament or being back at the House?
I know it is difficult, but actually we proved last year and even last couple of weeks that you can run select committees on a virtual basis and get all the questioning in that you need to do. The benefit of having a virtual parliament is that all ministers are there and the opposition parties, they took their full slate of questions, but they've got more ministers to choose from. Obviously, initially the first range of questions are going to go to the Prime Minister and Minister for COVID response on the particular responses here. But anyway, they chose not to, so we had this sort of skinnied down version. Labor took the view that we didn't want to exercise our questions, described as patsy questions. I mean, we use them to get information out, but we thought this is a time for the opposition to call the government to account, so we'll let that happen. So, I'll leave other people to judge what value they think we get out of it. Look, it is always a difficult judgment issue for both the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition to gauge how do we make sure that our important democratic institutions continue to function, that the government is called to account, that the government is required to properly explain itself, give information and reassure people. I'll leave other people to judge whether they think what is happening at the moment is the best way to do that.
Okay. Now, you were at question time on Tuesday. You were asked about surgery backlog. But since then, do you have about surgery backlog since this level 4 lockdown? Mm-hmm. Since then, have you got any other information on that?
No, I mean, at the moment, because we don't, I mean, the DHBs kind of do a tally at the end of the month. What have they done? What haven't they done? it's only the 2nd of September, so they'll still be telling their figures for August. So at the time I answered the question, we didn't have any data at all for August. We had estimates. The question was about inpatient procedures. So this is people who are admitted at least for one night for their procedures. There's a lot of outpatient stuff going on at the moment. All the cancer treatments are continuing. A lot of hospitals have got even a large chunk of their planned care or elective surgery, as it used to be called, people who have booked in procedures, so there's no urgency to it, but you want to get it done. A lot of the DHBs have managed to get a lot of that work continuing. In Auckland, it has been different because that's where the outbreak has been, a growing number of hospitalizations for COVID patients. But on top of that, you also had a lot of healthcare professionals and healthcare workers who had been to places or locations of interest, who had been exposed, and so a lot of absences. So the system very much slowed down in Auckland for the safety of everybody. That had to happen. And so that, you know, that has had an impact on planned care. So look, we know because of other lockdowns and this one, people will have had their planned surgeries disrupted and postponed. But we also saw, even last year, as a result of the additional money that the government put into the DHBs, they were able to recover a lot of the backlog, at least from the early part of the lockdown. Still a bit of recovery going on for some of the latter stages, and it'll take some time to recover the backlog from this lockdown too.
Okay, so going on that, before this August level four lockdown, how much do you have any numbers on how much have that backlog since been cleared?
Well, we know that all of the backlog caused by the first March and April lockdown from last year has been cleared. I think the Auckland August lockdown has been cleared. And then I think there's a couple of other lockdowns subsequent to that where I think, you know, some of the DHBs or the Auckland ones are still catching up. And that is, you know, that is the nature of it. So we gave funding to the DHBs over a period of 3 years because we knew there'd be a knock-on effect, and we also anticipated there would be other lockdowns. So we sort of prepared ourselves for that. We put in $282.5 million last year. We put in another $90 million this year. Some of that funding has gone into also upgrading some facilities. So there's some better, you know, you hear a lot at the moment about negative pressure rooms and the spaces where COVID patients have to go, upgrading some of the facilities. So there are safer places for COVID patients to go, safer in the sense of safer to staff and other patients in a hospital. So there's been work on that as well.
Would that money also go towards clearing this lockdown's the backlog caused by this lockdown as well?
I expect so, because the funding was over a 3 year period starting last year. So, and it was done in anticipation that we would have other lockdowns. So the money is there, and we will continue to support the DHBs to clear those backlogs. Yeah.
Okay, moving on to my final topics for today on vaccinations. So now everyone aged 12 or up above are eligible to book a vaccine based on the numbers you have got. Are you happy with the rate that is going now, like the number of people are booking to get their first jab?
Yeah, well, we've got a heap of people, well over a million bookings in the system at the moment. There's over 3.5 million doses have been administered already. I think around about 1.4 million people now have had doses. I think the numbers are looking good. The speed with which we're rolling out the vaccination program now is really picked up. So we're doing over 75,000 a day. I mean, we peaked at over 90,000 last week on a day, or maybe the week before that, actually. We've always been dependent on the delivery schedule that was agreed with Pfizer. And the reality is, look, we're dealing with Big Pharma. If they want to change their delivery schedule, they kind of do at pretty short notice. But actually, they've been pretty good. And because of the speed with which the vaccination program is going now, we've been able to talk to Pfizer and other countries and get some more doses in and continue the pace at which we're rolling the vaccination program now.
But should have the vaccination drive been rolled out towards the Pacifica, Māori and Pacifica community first, especially because for last year's August lockdown and this year's a level four lockdown, they are facing the most impacts of the outbreaks?
Well, yeah, so there's always a question about the sequencing of it. When you've got a thing, you know, we don't have all the vaccinations all at one point in time, then we sort of take time to roll it out. There's the delivery schedule, there's the speed at which we can actually set up just the infrastructure and the, get the people on board and the processes to actually do a vaccination program. So we've done all that. And then there's, so who do you order? So we, you know, we made the border workers, the healthcare workers, we put them first, older people, because you know, they were typically, all the medical evidence was that they were typically more vulnerable if they contracted COVID. We've had a separate stream of work on, you know, what we call the kind of the equity issues, making sure that those populations who often struggle to get basic healthcare anyway, that there are specific programs for them. So we've been working with Pacific healthcare providers and Māori health providers as well to do that. I mean, the reality is at older ages, live for Māori and Pacifica over the age of 50, actually their numbers are looking pretty good in terms of their proportion of the population. For younger Pacific and Māori peoples, not so good. And there is a heap of work going on at the moment to make sure that we're getting that reach. And I, you know, some of the Pacific health providers really are doing an absolutely terrific job. And we need them, because actually it's having a, you know, it's having a Pacific nurse, doctor, healthcare professional administering your vaccination that gives you kind of confidence about it. And we're now seeing, the uptake of that. So look, it has taken a while, but I think we're pretty pleased with the progress that is now being made.
Okay, I want to end this on the topic of mandatory vaccinations. Now, as you said at the last question, that healthcare workers are part of the priority group, but should they be mandatory vaccinated? Because some other parts of the world, like New South Wales, are planning to do that. British Columbia in Canada are already doing this.
Yeah, so we're considering that. We've been talking to health worker unions about this. We've made it pretty much compulsory for border workers, because we know that's a big chunk of vulnerability for infection. The reality is we do have to think about how do we keep healthcare workers and patients in our hospitals and our health facilities safe and protected from infection. So we are thinking seriously about that. And actually, you know, the senior medics who are providing the leadership in all this area are saying it would be wrong to put healthcare workers or expose healthcare workers to the risks, given, you know, the nature of the variants now moving here and around the world. And we've got to make sure that healthcare workers working in our health facilities are as protected as possible. So look, that is being considered.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little.
That was